This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Dante Fowler Jr. had an excellent football game yesterday. He will show up in my game take, that is for sure. As much for another play that he made as that play, which, you know, Carolina was moving the ball down the field on the opening drive. You know, the discussion Friday about, you know, keys to a win was, I actually suggested if they win the coin toss, don't defer, take the ball and take the lead. They can't stop you. They won't be able to stop you. You got to bury them early because they're more than capable offensively of moving the football. And on that opening drive, it was like, you know, a knife through warm butter down the field until that play, which was a terrible play by Dalton, of course, but there was pressure from Farrell on that play that hurried him up, that's for sure. A good day for the defense, no doubt, when you hold the opponent to just 7 points and 180 yards and 10 first downs. It's a good day for the defense. But did it convince me defensively? More on that coming up. All right, what I liked. Let's start with that. I start with the offense. You know, after what I said in the open about this being kind of, you know, a representation of a changed organization, an organizational win to a certain degree, because the old regime would have absolutely, you know, soiled themselves on a day like yesterday, and they didn't miss a beat, this group, at all. And that's what you get when you have a general manager who knows what he's doing in terms of the players that he picks, and more importantly, even before the players that he picks, the head coach that he picks and the staff that that head coach is able to attract. Specific to the game, offense is number one on my list. You know, I will preface this with Carolina's horrendous on defense, and they were injured on defense coming in, even more injured than we thought middle towards the end of last week. They were no match for anybody playing quarterback yesterday. That is true. Now, you still have to do it, and you don't have to have it, you know, look unimpressive. Everything Washington did really after Mariota's first drive as he's trying to get his sea legs was impressive. The plan was coming in, they thought this could be a 200-yard-plus rushing day against the Panthers. And that was highlighted, that plan was highlighted by making the quarterback a part of the run game yesterday. They knew that Carolina had no ability to, A, stop the, you know, a traditional run, but when you had to account for the quarterback in 11-on-11 football, it was going to be a long day for them defensively. If Washington had not thrown a pass yesterday, they still would have won the game by 4 touchdowns, you know, instead of 4.5 touchdowns. I just love what they're doing offensively with Daniels, and then they did it with Mariota as well. It's almost unfair. There are plenty of dual threat teams in the league. You know, we've seen them for years now where the quarterback is a part of the run game designed or option. Jaden and Marcus Mariota are excellent ball handlers in the read option game, and excellent decision makers. Mariota's always been an excellent zone read quarterback. He has very good ball skills and ball handling skills and ball faking skills, and he's a good decision maker. Jaden is the same. So there was no drop off other than, you know, the dynamic athleticism. Although Mariota, again, good athlete for sure. Very few can match Jaden's athleticism, but the run game was dominant. Dominant. This team, with running backs, with quarterbacks, they feasted. 421 yards total in the game, 214 rushing at 5.8 yards per rush. I don't know what it's going to show in terms of yards before contact, but man, they were, the offensive line was dominant up front. It seemed like runners weren't getting stopped until they were 2 yards past the line of scrimmage. The team had 26 first downs. They were 5 for 10 on third down. By the way, not one fourth down attempt yesterday, so their perfection remains intact. They dominated time of possession, 35 minutes to 25 minutes. As good as their run game was, they threw the ball effectively. Again, even though they didn't really need to throw it until the end of the first half, when they went 92 yards in the final 2 minutes and 22 seconds. On that drive. More on that coming up. This was dominance everywhere. Line of scrimmage, skill position players, coordinator. They had a good plan coming in, knew it would work with nearly any mobility at quarterback that could be presented as a legit run threat, and they dominated that way. Another game in which the points per drive number is going to go up. They had in the game basically 9 possessions, although really 8 because the final possession was a run out the clock possession. So you take the 8, they scored on 7 of the 8. They punted once. They didn't turn it over, and they punted just one time. All right, 7 scores on 8 real possessions. You don't count that last one because if they needed to score, they would have. But they ran the clock out on that last drive. They had a defensive touchdown, obviously, as well, that kicked off the scoring on the day. 3 touchdowns, 4 field goals offensively in 7 scoring drives on 8 attempts. That is just ridiculous what we have seen from them, starting with that Giant game. You know, starting with that Giant game, what they have done in terms of points per drive, they are almost, I believe, double the team that's in second in points per drive right now. An elite offense, clear, just flat out, it's elite. And it was elite yesterday, even without the MVP candidate at quarterback. The opponent had a lot to do with that. I get it, you know. They've played some bad teams. You know, they're 5-2. The Giants, the Cardinals, the Browns, and the Panthers are 4 of their 5 wins. I think the Cincinnati win was impressive. You know, I think Cincinnati's a good team. I do. I don't care what their record says. It's 3-4 now. Baltimore, the loss of Baltimore was impressive. I'm not, you know, coming off that this is a good football team because 4 out of their 5 wins have come against opponents that have lost a lot more games than they have won. Next up, after the offense overall, by the way, let me just mention that yesterday is a good day for Cliff Kingsbury, right? I mean, if you're going to take the best player on the team off of the team after the first drive of the game, and the offense never slows down, except maybe in the red zone. Okay, they were 3 for 6 in the red zone. You got to give credit to the coordinator. I mean, it's a day in which Kingsbury comes off looking pretty good. I think that there are better examples, you know, the Cincinnati game, a couple of the others, but you take Daniels off the field and the offense still scores on the 6 of 7 drives that they ended up having without him. Pretty damn impressive. I loved the end of the first half drive. I loved that they did not care at all about Jaden being out and Marcus Mariota being in. Keep in mind, you know, that first possession with Marcus was a bit rough. They scored on the second possession He actually missed, a receiver on that drive, but they ended up scoring. It was more of kind of the Brian Robinson drive on that touchdown. Then they, had the 4th-and-1 stop, but they didn't do much with it. They ended up kicking a field goal, and they get the ball back with 2:22 at their own 8-yard line. That was after that terrific play by the player for Carolina who kept the ball from going into the end zone. Washington's got the ball at their own 8-yard line. And they run Brian Robinson for 3 yards, 2-minute warning. Mariota keeps it for 4. It's 3rd-and-3. They get a neutral zone infraction that gives them a 1st down at the 20-yard line. All right. And then they go to work. Mariota to Ertz for 7 yards. Mariota to Terry for 18. Mariota to Terry for another 15. Mariota to Deami Brown for 23 yards. Mariota touchdown pass to Zach Ertz for 12 yards. 8 plays, 92 yards, 10 seconds left in the half, 27-0. A lot of teams against a team as impotent as Carolina was all the way around, up 20-0 with a backup quarterback from their own 8-yard line, they're probably going to play it more conservatively. A lot of teams would do that. Not Quinn, not Kingsbury. They had total belief in Mariota. Maybe, again, it was in part because they had total belief in anybody against Carolina's defense. That's probably part of the equation there. But I loved how they stayed aggressive. They went after it. And if the game wasn't already over, which it really felt like it was over, certainly at 20-0, it was over at 27-0. They could have faked Mariota, a Mariota injury on the first play of the 3rd quarter to bring in the emergency quarterback Driscoll to play him the rest of the way. Driscoll would have been good yesterday as well. I love that end of first half drive. Also, on the things that I liked list, the offensive line is a very good run-blocking line. Now, who's going to grade out well when we get all the advanced numbers later on today? I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me if everybody grades out pretty well. The quarterback had time when he threw it. They ran it at will. They ran it to the tune of 5.8 yards per carry. They honestly did not need to throw the football yesterday. Brian Robinson, 5.9 yards per carry. Jaden had, obviously the 47-yard run. McNichols averaged 6 yards a carry. Eckler averaged 4.5 yards per carry. I mean, they have become a very good run-blocking offensive line. I think Cosmi and Biotish and Allegretti, the interior, are outstanding. Brandon Coleman got hurt. We'll have to see what that is. In terms of the severity of that injury, we'll know more about that later on today, I think, as well. But Cornelius Lucas has played a lot of football. I think Wiley is a good run-blocking tackle. The receivers do their best. Bates is a good blocker. Ertz is a solid blocker. Just overall, Washington's ability to run the football the way they've run the football this year. Remember, air raid. They're going to throw it a lot more than they're going to run it, and they're not going to protect the young. No, Cliff Kingsbury did protect his young quarterback in Arizona. They had James Conner. They did run it a lot the year that they were successful. And they have become very much, they weren't last week, because that's not really what they thought they could do against Baltimore, to move the football. And I don't have a problem with that. Week in and week out, my thing is, as a fan, whatever it takes to possess the football, move the sticks, and score points, that's what you should do on that given day. But they do have an identity when they are playing smash-mouth bully ball. Their offensive line does a great job, and then they've got the backs to match. Robinson Jr., I thought that this was a chance, if he was healthy, to have a big day. And look, if the game had been competitive at all, he would have gone for a 150. He went 12 carries for 71 yards, 5.9 yards per carry, and had that touchdown run, which was just too easy. He is benefiting, as is Eckler, as is McNichols when he's in there. By the way, as are the offensive linemen and wide receivers, when the quarterback is a run threat. We've seen this in football for 12 years, going back to RG3. When you put the defense in conflict from the jump with a quarterback who may keep it on a zone read, who may go play action on a zone read. You're just making it so much easier for everybody else. This is why the idea that I think some have, I'm not suggesting that most of you have, that, oh my God, he got hurt. He can't run it. You can't run him. Can't run these, you know, read option plays. Of course you have to. This is what is making them dynamic and elite offensively. The defense doesn't know what's coming. Is he going to keep it? Is he going to leave it in Robinson Jr.'s gut? Is he going play action on this one? Is he going play action boot on this one? They got so many options when you got a quarterback that is dual threat, and it didn't drop off at all with Mariota. Great job by the offensive line. Great job by Robinson Jr. in the game. I thought he was outstanding. Mariota obviously came in, and after, you know, getting his sea legs after that first drive, outstanding in the game. Again, I get it. The opponent was bad, but they decimated, they annihilated, they absolutely trounced the opponent, like you should if you're any good. 18 of 23, 205 yards, two touchdowns, no picks, took only one sack, rushed it 11 times for 34 yards. He ended up with a 132.8 passer rating, a 64.7 QBR. Not bad. I thought 18 was great. I had forgotten he was number 18 when he came into the game. Looked a little bit strange on Mariota. Seems more of the single-digit QB number type. But he was outstanding. And I'll tell you, seriously, if they have to play Sunday with him, obviously I would much prefer Jaden Daniels. But there is a luxury, you know, I don't want to test that luxury too much during the course of the year, because number 5 is an MVP caliber player, and number 18 is more of a back half of the league starter or very, very high-end backup. But he's perfect for this offense. He's perfect to be able to put in there and do the same things you were planning on doing with Jaden Daniels. They did not change their game plan. From my standpoint, maybe the coaches will say much differently. I don't know. But Mariota was not, you know, given a scaled-back plan. The plan didn't change, it didn't seem to me, with him in the game. Loved that about the game. Terry McLaurin, man, he is quietly putting together a really good season right now. You know, after those first couple of games, he was 6-6 on targets yesterday, 98 yards, 16.3 yards per catch. Last week he had 6 catches on 7 targets, and God, some of those catches against Baltimore, contested great catches. You know, had 2 100-yard days against Cincinnati and Cleveland. Big plays for Terry. He's just really, really benefiting from just much improved quarterback play, which, by the way, goes hand in hand with the coordinator. They've got one of those for the first time in several years. And that's elevating the play of the offensive line, which, by the way, is different anyway than it was last year. Terry's really getting that opportunity that we, you know, fans wanted to see him with a real quarterback, to see what it looked like with a real quarterback. Trust me, the quarterback that was in there in relief of the starter is better than any quarterback they've had in the last several years. I can already feel those tweets coming. Really? You think he's better than Sam Howell or Taylor Heinicke? I do. I actually do. Turnover margin. You know, they didn't need him. Honestly, okay, they would have won the game 33-7 or 30-7 without him. But Fowler Jr.'s play is a great play. Good pressure by Farrell. The play before that, the throwback screen with Dalton, you know, rolling right and then coming back to, I think it was Leggett on a design screen. There was pressure that impacted that play as well. That was Fowler Jr., I think, on that pressure. But, you know, look, terrible play by Dalton. Terrible. You know, this is something that has been probably the number one thing during the course of his career that's been problematic for him. You know, he doesn't have the great arm strength, but it's been more than good enough. He is really good in certain schemes. He was certainly more dual threat earlier in his career than he is now, but he will put two or three balls up for grabs on decisions that you're just like, really? You threw that one? Fowler Jr. still had to catch it, and he turned it into a pick six. How about Emmanuel Forbes? He had to catch it. Not a great throw. Had to catch it. I was happy for him. I was interested, Denton, in that the guy that has the all-time mark for pick sixes in college football just didn't look to make a big return. He just kind of went down.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Let me just start off with this. If he's healthy, he plays. All right, if he's 100% or something resembling Jaden Daniels and they think he can be Jaden Daniels, he plays. Like, you're not going to hold him out of the game if he's no longer injured. If he's injured, I'm all for being cautious and holding him out. If he's not going to be able to play like Jaden Daniels, if there's like a twinge when he torques himself or he rotates to throw the football, or he's going to, you know, not feel as free to run and make plays, then I don't want him to play. But if he is okay, he plays. Good morning, everybody. It's Friday during football season. We're week 8 already in the NFL. It's not exactly the halfway mark. That comes halfway through next week's games because it is an 18-week season, playing 17 games. And Washington's got a big one on Sunday against Chicago. And Adam Schefter yesterday tweeted out the following after Jaden Daniels was held out of practice for a second straight day. He tweeted out, where is it? I had it here a moment ago. Quote, Washington plans to attempt to try to practice Jaden Daniels on Friday. Close quote. So at some point, probably in the first hour or two of the show, we'll probably find out if he's practicing. I don't know if that means we're going to find out definitively if they're going to play him. Obviously, if they practice him today, they're trying to determine whether or not he's ready to go or not. And Quinn's going to have more on that during his post-presser, right, Denton? Does he talk after or before practice today?
He talks after practice.
Do you remember?
He talks after practice.
Why am I forgetting?
He talks after practice on Friday, so probably be around like 12-ish or so.
It will be right around 12-ish?
That's generally, that's why we've had to move Ben, because he talks like right at 12:15, so hopefully around that time.
Okay, so yeah, I'm looking to see, because they send out the itinerary for the week, and on Friday, it is, all right, practice 11:10 a.m., coach will be available after practice. Yeah, and that's typically sometime around, you know, 12 noon, 12:15-ish, something like that. Look, I don't even think, honestly, the quarterback on Sunday is the key to a win over Chicago. And I'll get to my keys to a win, Washington beats the Bears, if coming up here in the first hour of the show. Now, do I think that they've got a better chance with Jaden Daniels against the Bears healthy? Of course I do. I'm not sitting here telling you that there's no difference between Mariota and Jaden Daniels. Don't mistake me complimenting Marcus Mariota's performance on Sunday for I think they're better off with Marcus Mariota or there's no difference. Of course there's a difference, but I actually think defensively that's the key Sunday. They've got to get some stops on Sunday. And offensively, they've got to do some things if Mariota is the starting quarterback to keep him from becoming a one-dimensional dropback quarterback. Something that Jaden's already proven he can do. Which, you know, when you think about it, and we talked about this after the Baltimore game, there are very few quarterbacks in the NFL, but it is quite the luxury to have a quarterback that you can still be productive with when you are one-dimensional. There aren't many teams that can do that with their quarterback. And I think Jaden's already proven that against the Ravens when they couldn't run the football and they really didn't even try to run the football. And yet he was delivering dime after dime from the pocket. But again, I kind of came on the air here having read a couple of tweets from various people concerned now that he might play. What are you concerned about? What do you know? You don't know anything. I don't think this group's going to say, oh, man, I know he's in pain, but we're going to pad that thing up. Doc says if we pad it up good enough, he should be okay. You know, I mean, if he takes a direct shot, it could be bad and he could be out for a lot longer, but we're going to go ahead and play him anyway. They're not going to do that. They're not going to do that in week 8. You know, it's not even about, you know, protecting the franchise. It's about that it's a week 8 game. And after this game, you've got another 9 football games. And you're already 5-2. And, you know, there's nothing that says have to win Sunday. This came from Paul. Paul just wrote, I'll be very disappointed if they don't take the cautionary route. Schefter's tweet was disturbing. Disturbing? God, some of you are just so, so emotionally just triggered after. Look, I'm not saying that you don't have reasons to be, okay? We went through it together for 25 years. We did. It was bad. I don't think anybody that's new to this town, in that organization or outside of it, can understand what we all went through. And there is a lot of trauma that still lingers to this very day. But there is no chance you would get me on board with, he feels great, he looks great, I mean, doesn't have any pain anywhere, but, you know, we're just going to give it a week. Why? I mean, for what? If he's going to be the same Sunday as he would be next Sunday, well, then play him this Sunday. And if he's not, don't play him. Doesn't seem that hard to me.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Forgetting Ben is hard to do, but I'm not going to forget Courtney. All right, so what are you expecting at practice today? Do you think he will practice per the Adam Schefter suggestion or not?
What was the Adam Schefter suggestion? That they're going to try to attempt for him to practice? So yes. Well, I don't know what that means.
From one reporter to another, a little bit of a dig, a little bit of a shot.
Well, no, it is what it is. I'm saying, I think ultimately that is sort of the accurate take in the sense that I don't think we really know. If we walk down there in a few minutes and number five is out there on the field, I mean, it won't blow me away. I don't necessarily know that that means he's gonna go. You know, it just feels like, again, the week-to-week comment, the rookie, the importance, the rib can be, you know, a pain thing, a tricky thing. Sometimes you just have to let it heal. And, you know, they're 5-2. It's still early. All these things, it just feels like they're going to let him sit a week. But, you know, we don't know the whole story about the injury. We don't know the exact nature of this rib issue. So, you know, we'll find out. I'm still sort of assuming if week to week means what it is typically, then I would assume he's out, but we'll, you know, have a better feeling in a few minutes.
I talked to Keim yesterday about this. Do you agree with him that they've done a pretty good job of keeping the information related to the injury at a bare, you know, need to know minimum?
Well, I mean, I think this goes back to what we were talking about, whether it was the coaching search, whether it was who were they going to pick at number two. You know, this is just not a group that has leaked a lot. You know, Adam Peters, we think of him coming broadly, sure. This is a guy we think of him coming from the 49ers, but he started his career with Bill Belichick and the Patriots. And it's, you know, the more I've covered it now, not to say that the 49ers are some, you know, a bunch of gossipers, but it just, you know, the Belichick thing is clearly, you know, locked down. Nobody talking. I think by and large, that's what they have done. Now, which isn't to say that they are, you know, when Dan Quinn talks to us, I think he gives us some information, and I think he typically keeps us. He doesn't send us down, you know, false paths. But you know, at the same point, you know, sometimes there's no reason for them to say much. I get it. In this case, you know, maybe there is a little bit of like keeping the Bears on edge, you know, not knowing exactly what to do. But I would imagine the Bears are probably thinking it's Mariota as well.
Interesting. We're talking to Ben Standig, of course, The Athletic. Subscribe to it. Follow him on X at Ben Standig and listen to his podcast, Standig Room Only. So let's just go with that. Let's go with the assumption that it's Mariota. What sort of chance do you give him on Sunday, and how do they beat the Bears?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, you know, there's a lot. Obviously, Jaden Daniels is what is the primary driver on the football field as to why this is working, particularly since it's the offense that's been by far the more impressive group, of the units out there. You know, Mariota just doesn't have the same type of arm strength or downfield throwing talent, not the same accuracy, but you can still do a lot of the same, you know, mobile plays, the read options. You know, he can throw underneath. He's obviously a veteran. He's not going to be, you know, going out there and feeling, you know, crazy nerves or anything. And, you know, I think one thing Cliff Kingsbury has shown so far is when they have brought different people in and out of the lineup, using plays to maximize their strengths and perhaps, you know, hide some potential deficiencies. So I think from that perspective, it's not going to be square peg round hole with the offense. So we'll just have to see. I mean, look, Mariota's been a good quarterback at points in his career, and there's a reason now why he's more of a, you know, high-end backup. So I think he can give them a fair shot. And look, this is also probably the toughest defense that they face this year, right? With the Bears, certainly statistically, they're the most impressive. I think ultimately,
certainly
probably
from a pass defense standpoint, they're the best, no doubt.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, this is like, you can't really game plan this, but, you know, I think getting a lead is going to be very, very important here, because you don't want Mariota throwing from behind, being forced to have to throw. Okay. And also that would probably mean, you know, you can lean more into Brian Robinson and Austin Eckler on the ground. Kingsbury can go a little bit maybe deeper into his bag of tricks with the plays that he's been calling and using these different formations that have really befuddled defenses so far, rather than just simply saying, hey, we got to throw the ball repeatedly. So I think all that is key. And then, you know, look, in the just to flip it to the other side, I think there's still a lot of questions about Washington secondary. The games in which the pass defense has not looked poor is the games where they've gotten a good pass rush. So, you know, looks like they're going to get Dorrance Armstrong back this week. That they got some good pass rush last week. If they can do that again, then that helps cover up the back end. If not, you know, Caleb Williams can get the ball to his receivers. They've got a bunch of them, starting with DJ Moore. So, you know, there's challenges for sure, but, you know, get a lead, I think it's going to help both sides a lot.
Other injuries, real quickly, Brandon Coleman, is he going to more likely than not be out?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he has not practiced yet, so he's still in the protocol. He hasn't practiced yet, so we'll see. So I'm doubting it again. Concussion is always tricky, the rookie part. They do have Cornelius Lucas, so it's not like, you know, they're completely devoid of options at that spot. He's obviously been playing half the time this year. Yep. He started a bunch of games, so that's all reasonable there.
Dorrance Armstrong, back or not?
Yeah, it looks like he's back. At Cleveland Farrell was a DNP yesterday. Right. That's interesting because, one, he had at least done a little bit the day before, and he has missed games this year. They didn't suggest it was a rest day, so we'll have to see where he's at. That would be key, just purely from a depth perspective, because, you know, they already know John Allen and et cetera. So that would be big if he's able to play.
So, you know, I just talked about this, and one of the reasons I didn't get to you on time is I was going on and on about the game on Sunday and what I thought were important things. You've touched on it a little bit. I think it's going to be a theme until it isn't, until there's a reason for it not to be. And that's, I'm just not yet a believer that defensively, like, they've gotten much better. I can't get there off of Carolina and Cleveland, and, you know, Arizona. And the Bears are not Baltimore, they're not Cincinnati, but they're better than Carolina and Cleveland offensively, and they've played their best football. What do you think they are now, and what do you think they can become as the season goes along?
Well, what I think we've seen, similar to, like, we've talked before about, yeah, sure, they haven't beaten teams with great records, but they've crushed the ones that they are facing. And that says a lot about the effort they're putting in. You know, defensively, you see a lot of guys running to the ball. They're hitting hard. You know, there's a lot of, you know, camaraderie out there, you can say. So I think that shows how there has been improvement. That said, the three quarterbacks that they've played this year that are sort of Pro Bowl level, right, Baker Mayfield, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, all did whatever they wanted to do. Kyler Murray is maybe the one exception, but, you know, Arizona's been very up and down this year on their own. And, yeah, so huge wins over Carolina and Cleveland. They did what they had to do, and it helped their statistical profile. But I don't think, to me, it says, hey, they figured things out. I think there's still a lot of questions at corner. And, but, you know, both of these teams have the same kind of deal. They have winning records, but they haven't beaten teams that also have winning records for the most part. So I think this will be a very interesting test in that regard. The Bears' defense looks to be legit, just like Washington's offense has been pretty good, except Washington doesn't have their quarterback. And, you know, Caleb Williams has been much better of late, again, against lesser teams. but Washington's back, you know, back four, back five, what have you. I think that is still a weakness. So the Bears offensive line isn't so hot. If they can protect Caleb Williams and he's got a shot to work down the field, I'd be concerned for Washington. If he has to, you know, get moved around because of the pass rush, then I think Washington's chances go up. But yeah, I'm not there yet on this defense. And that's also leads into the trade deadline. Like, I don't think that they're one piece away. I think they can get good to get some help, but I don't think it's like they get one corner and they're all good. I think they still have a bunch of holes, but obviously, again, they're playing well. The coaching seems to be working, and that's helping, cover up some of the concerns.
All right. Is it fair to say that your lean right now is that Mariota is the starter Sunday?
That would be my lean right now. I mean, until Jaden Daniels practices, you know, and again, big picture-wise, he hasn't practiced yet. He's dealing with this injury. They have been cautious already with some other people with injuries. They talk about not wanting to put anybody out there if they can't do their thing completely. Well, this is that, you know, times 10 because of the quarterback and all that. So I would just be surprised at this point if he plays. But again, maybe the week-to-week designation was a false flag. Maybe he wasn't as bad, and the couple days off helped him out a lot. But I would guess Mariota if you make me pick right now.
All right, prediction then with Mariota at the helm.
This is the first game where I feel like my prediction is more off of like what it's less about football and more just about vibes. You know, this team has been in a very good space, obviously, this whole season. Cliff Kingsbury's done a fantastic job calling plays, putting people in the right positions. I do think the Bears, we still need to see exactly what they are offensively because they have, again, been scoring of late, but more against some lesser teams. So I'll ride with the momentum here, the home crowd, which is a weird thing to say here, but I'll go 2017 Washington. Just again, give Mariota the lead. I think they can win. They start trailing by 7 to 10 points. I think that's where they get into trouble.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. All right, thanks. Appreciate it. And sorry to get to you late. But keep us posted. Follow Ben on Twitter. Ben will report. They're taking the practice field in 15 minutes, right?
Yeah. Yes,
and
sir.
We'll know in 15 minutes if he's practicing today.
Yeah, for sure. I will note this in your Yelp review, but otherwise I appreciate it as always.
I'm really concerned about my Yelp review. really am. You know, just a couple of things can really impact that rating. Thank you,
Absolutely.
Ben. Appreciate it.
See
ya. You think Marcus Mariota can beat the Bears if he starts? 301-230-0980. Phone lines are open. So I do. I think Washington can beat Chicago with Marcus Mariota quarterbacking. I hope Jaden Daniels is healthy and ready to go. But if he isn't, I still think it is doable. And I think it starts with, by the way, the other side of the ball for Washington Sunday. They have to be able to stop Chicago. Chicago's been on a run here recently. Caleb Williams has gotten hot. They have started to really be a balanced team. They beat the Rams 24-18, basically rushed and threw for the same amount of yards in that game. They crushed the Panthers, just like Washington just did. In that game, Caleb threw for over 300 yards. They also rushed for 130 yards in the game as well. And then in their win in London over Jacksonville, they didn't get stopped. I mean, Caleb was 23 of 29, four touchdowns. They rushed for 152 yards. They have gotten it going offensively. They have a quarterback that's getting more comfortable, more confident. They've got a back in DeAndre Swift who is more than capable. And they do have receivers. All right, Keenan Allen, Roma Dunze, the rookie from Washington, DJ Moore, Cole Kmet, the tight end. He'll throw it to the backs. He'll throw it to Swift a bunch. Sunday's game still comes down to, can Washington be better than they've been against the better offensive teams they've faced on defense? They have to be that. You know, with Jaden or without Jaden, you're going to be in some dogfights, in some potentially high-scoring dogfights, if you can't get the other team off the field. Sunday, they did a nice job against a team that actually wasn't terrible offensively coming in. They were terrible in defense. The game did get away from them pretty quickly, and they became a one-dimensional team. But defensively, they played a really solid game. You know, I mentioned that even after Carolina moved the football down the field on the opening drive, there were three plays. You had the Cleveland Farrell, who did a great job. By the way, Daron Payne was outstanding on that play, too. When they stopped Hubbard for a loss on first down, the throwback screen was disrupted by Fowler, and it landed incomplete. And then the interception, there was pressure from Farrell. And it was a screen, and Fowler read it, and it was a terrible throw by Dalton, but it was kind of a panicked, hurried throw because he was under duress. So maybe we saw something Sunday. By the way, the more you watch it, and I watched more of the defense yesterday, damn, Luvu can play. And I just love the fact that it doesn't seem like an offense ever knows exactly where they're going to be. And there's something that they do defensively with Wagner and Luvu, both kind of in the A-gap, you know, basically right over the center. It makes it really difficult for teams. But I'm not sitting here telling you the defense is good, because it's not. That's where it starts Sunday. Now, on the other side, offensively, the last three games, you know, the Chicago Bears have beaten the Rams, Panthers, and Jags. They're 4-2. They open the season with a win over the pitiful Titans with 93 passing yards. And then they lost a game against Houston on Sunday Night Football. Then they lost at Indy, but they've won three in a row. Let me just begin with this. The reason they've won three games in a row is they are plus six in the turnover margin. They are, you know, turnover margin in the league right now, they are top three. They're third in takeaways, and I think they're third in overall turnover margin. They're third in turnover margin, tied for third. Buffalo's one, Pittsburgh's two, Chicago's three. In takeaways, Chicago's third, tied for third, after Green Bay with 17 and Minnesota with 14. So the Bears have done good job in turnover margin and taking the ball away. They had two turnovers in the Rams game. They forced two takeaways, didn't turn the ball over themselves. Against the Panthers, they had three takeaways and they didn't turn the ball over themselves. And then the Jags turned it over twice. Chicago also turned it over once in that game, but they were plus one. So they're plus six in their last three games, turnover margin. That's why, more than anything else, they've won three straight games. But teams have moved the ball against Chicago. Their defense is top 10 per DVOA, but part of that is the takeaway. Part of the equation, the Rams with Kyren Williams, he ran for 5 yards a carry, 94 yards in a 24-18 loss. Stafford was really good in that game. He was 5-for-11 on third down. They just turned it over twice. That was the difference in the game. The Panthers, Chuba Hubbard, who didn't do anything against Washington, had 97 yards on 13 carries. He went for 7.5 yards per carry. The big difference in that game, it was 36-10. The Panthers just handed them the ball three times. You know, they were minus three in the turnover margin. And then Jacksonville didn't try to run the ball because they couldn't stop Chicago and they got behind. But, you know, they were 7-for-15 on third down. Trevor Lawrence threw for 240, two touchdowns in the game, had a 67 QBR in the game. Evan Engram, the tight end, 10 catches, 102 yards. The difference was, again, they lost the turnover battle and they could not get off the field against the Bears' offense. So I think offensively, what Washington's done very well, which is be versatile, be balanced, show a lot of different formations out of their run game. My guy Kevin in Arlington sent me this thing that Brian Baldinger did on the internet, breaking down all of the formations on their opening drive on all of their runs. It was a different look on each one. My favorite formation, and I've gone back to this a couple of times, I think we first started talking about it in week two against the Giants, is that offset I formation, where, you know, Jaden is in the shotgun and Brian Robinson Jr. and Austin Ekeler are basically next to him in an eye. That's a formation until this year I don't think I had seen much of. And they've done so many different things out of that formation. But I'll tell you, it is really difficult out of that formation and others when your quarterback is also a potential runner on the play. And that doesn't change with Mariota. You know, the Bears in their last three games against the Rams, Panthers, and Jags have not faced an offense with a dual-threat quarterback. Matt Stafford isn't that. Andy Dalton isn't that. And Trevor Lawrence isn't that. The last time they faced something even remotely resembling dual threat was the game against the Indianapolis Colts. And that was the game in which Anthony Richardson threw a couple of picks, but they overcame it with great defense, and Jonathan Taylor ran wild against them, and they beat him 21-16. I think the dual threat nature of Washington's attack, rushing attack, with Mariota in the game, because it doesn't change that much. Of course, the dynamic part of it, the athleticism, yep, but Mariota scrambles well and he runs well. That's one thing he does well. Okay, sitting back in the pocket and, you know, being asked in dropback mode to beat you that way is not what he does well. So I don't hate the matchup for Washington's offense against Chicago's defense. The key to this game, like basically every game this year for me, is going to be, can they get enough stops? And in this particular game, because the Bears have feasted off of turnovers, they've got to protect the football. So, Denton, what do you think? Can they beat can they beat the Bears on Sunday with Marcus Mariota?
Can they? Yes. I don't have nearly as much faith in that as you do. I think he can go out there and win, but I don't know if I can ask Marcus Mariota, hey, go score every possession, the same way that Jaden Daniels has been able to. So if the defense isn't playing as well as they did against Carolina, which is the expectation because Carolina was awful, I don't know that it's fair to say that Marcus Mariota is going to lead them to victory, because Chicago's defense is significantly better than what we saw with the Panthers' defense, because the Panthers' defense also did not want to be on the field on Sunday. So I think it's possible. I think Marcus Mariota is a fine quarterback. I don't hate him as much as some people, but I don't love him as much as you. I'm like right in that gray area middle.
I don't love him. You keep saying that. Stop it.
It feels like you. How about like heavily? Is that fair? Because feels like you
not
like
even close.
Him.
No, I've been saying this since they signed him. There was so much about Marcus Mariota in his career that was so disappointing to me. I think he's a low end starter and a high end backup. You keep saying you love him. Because I loved his performance Sunday.
It has felt like you went like so two a couple weeks ago when the defense played really well against the Browns. You're like, we know the Browns stink, so this defense, it was not a good example of what the defense
the Browns
is
offense.
Or Browns offense.
Yeah.
But when Marcus Mariota plays against a terrible Carolina defense, the question is now, can he beat the Bears? Like, I'm not there yet.
Yeah. Well, again, I don't know how many times I've said this week, you know, we have to preface the Marcus Mariota optimism that I have with they faced a terrible defense. But no, I don't love Marcus Mariota. I just think that he is a good fit for this offense and a good fit as a backup for Jaden Daniels, and I think he's done a lot for him. By the way, your confidence level in not being able to score in every possession, I share that confidence with you, but based on Sunday, the evidence against a bad defense would indicate that they don't punt with him in the game either, because they scored on 7 of 8 possessions on Sunday against the Panthers. No, I don't. This is not about Kevin loves Marcus Mariota. I think I like him more than you do. We can definitely
say that is
factual.
Definitely.
You think he stinks. I don't think he stinks.
I think
he's a low end. I'm sorry.
I think he's that. Like, I was never in the camp of like it should be Jeff Driscoll out there. I was never that guy. There were people asking for that on Sunday. I was like, you're nuts. I don't want to see Jeff Driscoll. I'd rather have Mariota in there. But okay. I'm like very much tempering the expectations.
Yeah, my expectations for Sunday are that if he starts, they absolutely can win the game against this opponent. But the most important part of beating Chicago won't be Mariota. It will be the defense and whether or not it can get off the field enough against a Bears team that's been rolling offensively to give the offense and Mariota several opportunities. And then, of course, the Bears have feasted off turnovers. But, yeah, no, I'm not a Marcus Mariota fan. I used to crush him for some of the games, some of the big games that he played in Tennessee, where he was just so casual with the ball. That's got to be something that we watch on Sunday, too, because the Bears feast on turnovers. And Mariota, during the course of his career, has been a guy. He's so calm. He's so laid back. He's so, you know, the background that he comes from. He's just an easygoing, chill dude. But I think he's played that way too often in big spots, because he's been in some big games over the years, especially in Tennessee, where that actually ended up biting him in the backside. And that was something I never liked about him. But I do think he's a good fit for this particular team, and I give Adam Peters and company credit for seeing the value of having him with Jaden Daniels and the value of having somebody stylistically to back up Jaden Daniels, where nothing changes, because nothing changed on Sunday. And I think the attack against the Bears, here's what you wouldn't see. Like, if Mariota had to start against Baltimore, I don't think you would have seen as much drop back. I think they would have tried to attack Baltimore in a different way, and I think you would have been at a disadvantage in that game with Mariota. If you're going to ask him to throw the ball and drop back and throw it with no threat of a run game, that's a recipe for him for disaster. With Jaden, you can still move the football, score points. We only have to go back 2 weeks to see that. Right now, you know, I'm going to give you, you know, my keys to a win over the Bears with kind of either quarterback, because honestly, I don't think that that is top priority. Again, don't mistake me for saying or thinking that, oh, we're fine with Marcus Mariota. I think they're fine with Marcus Mariota. They're not as fine as they would be with Jaden. A healthy Jaden Daniels is a game changer, clearly, at the position. We all understand that. All right. Washington beats the Bears on Sunday. If they get stops on defense, I think this is honestly between now and the rest of the season. And, you know, they're going to play some teams that won't be great offensively. And they're really not going to play many teams that are great offensively. I mean, and looking at their schedule, I guess, you know, the Eagles certainly are getting better. The Falcons are certainly capable offensively, but they've got some bad offensive teams. You know, the Giants, the Steelers, the Titans, the Saints, who knows who will be playing quarterback at that point. The Cowboys are certainly capable offensively as a pass offense. But I think a theme to the rest of the season is going to be week in and week out. Defensively, what are they now? Or have they gotten better? Have they improved? Do they have an ability to stop teams that are capable of moving the football? Because the three teams they've played that are capable of moving the football have not only moved the football and scored points, but they've done it at an alarming rate. You know, until they start getting stops consistently week in and week out, this will be the theme. Because Tampa Bay, Cincinnati, and Baltimore. I went back and just went and looked at what those three teams did, and I know the opener is kind of its own standalone weird game, but let's include it for now anyway. Tampa Bay, Cincinnati, and Baltimore had 23 offensive drives against Washington, not counting, you know, run-out-the-clock drives or kneel-downs. They scored on 19 of the 23. That is a borderline unheard of hit rate. On the four drives that those three teams didn't score on, they punted twice. So Washington only forced two punts against those three opponents. They missed a field goal, and then there was the one turnover, the San Ristil interception in the Baltimore game, which really was more about the only bad throw that Lamar made all day. Those three teams averaged 33.3 points per game against Washington, 433 yards per game. They converted 64% of their third down opportunities, 100% on fourth down. Washington was 1-2 in those games, right? They beat Cincinnati in a shootout, and that's why, you know, we've said week in and week out here, even though defensively there are concerns against better offensive teams, it doesn't mean that they can't win those games, because they are capable offensively of keeping up. like they did against Baltimore and nearly had a chance there, like they did obviously in Cincinnati. Now, Chicago is not the same as Baltimore or Cincinnati or even Tampa for that matter, a healthy Tampa team. They're not the same, but they have really improved. And they've improved with good scheme, with good play calling, and good execution, including from the quarterback. But I want to make sure that you understand, I want them to get stops this week. I think there's a better chance of getting stops against the Bears than if they were playing a really good offensive team like Baltimore or Cincinnati. Chicago's not those teams, but they're much better than Carolina, much better than Cleveland, much better than the Giants, and they're playing their best football right now. The Bears have, in their current three-game winning streak, they've been averaging 31 points a game. They're 9-for-12 in the red zone in the three-game winning streak. Caleb's just simple traditional statistical numbers, 74% completion percentage, 7 touchdowns, 1 pick. He's rushed the ball 14 times for 102 yards. In watching him and going back and watching the last two games, the Jacksonville game and the Carolina game, they're doing a lot. Shane Waldron, the OC, is doing a lot to help him. I mean, there's more quick game. There's a lot of screens. They've been running the ball effectively, so you've got some real good play action opportunities. But it's also him. You know, it's the coordinator, but it's him. He's processing it quicker. He's seeing it quicker. The ball's out on time. It's not always accurate. You know, he's missed some. He hasn't given his the receivers, except for on screens, opportunities to sort of run afterwards. And they've got some good yards after catch guys. But he has done a nice job. And I think it's a combination of him and Shane Waldron, the OC, who, by the way, was here on Jay Gruden's staff back in 2016. And then went with Sean McVay to L.A. And then he was in Seattle. And now he is with Matt Eberflus in Chicago, coaching Caleb Williams. But you know, like, here's another thing just to give you an idea of, in the first three games, they weren't running as much quick game. They weren't running as much screen. He got sacked 13 times in three games. He's only been sacked 7 times in the last three games. His passer rating is 125. His QBR average-wise in the last two games, 85. I still see occasionally him missing here and there, but he's much more comfortable. And they've done a good job of giving him things to get comfortable with. They've got talent offensively. They've got really good receivers. They've got playmakers on that offense. And they've been humming to a certain degree. DeAndre Swift has averaged 4.8 yards per carry and has 3 rushing touchdowns in the last three games. He's been a legit pass threat in the screen game especially. They've got 3 big-time receivers, DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Roma Dunze, the rookie from Washington. They've got Cole Kmet at tight end. Roshan Johnson, the backup running back, is, you know, pretty good. He'll get some carries. He can catch the ball. Khalil Herbert, remember him? He had a big game against Washington when they blew out the Skins 40-20 last year in October on Thursday Night Football. I think he's on the trade block, Denton. They're not playing him recently. I think he's actually a really good back. But they're not playing him, which tells me they're probably trying to move him. Chicago, while not Baltimore or Cincinnati or even Tampa, they are more capable than what Washington faced last week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago in Cleveland, you know, or the Giants or even Arizona, I think, to a certain degree. Arizona's got the wild card and the quarterback, but they didn't really use the wild card against Washington for some unknown reason. So how does Washington get those stops? Because my number one key to beating the Ravens is for the defense to come up with some stops. You know, don't let, you know, here, Tampa, 7 out of 8 scores, drives. 6 out of 7 for Cincinnati. The one drive they didn't score on was the missed field goal. Baltimore, 6 for 8. You can't have that. You know, you can't give up 4, you can't give up 5 for 8, 5 for 7. If it's 5 for 9, 5 for 10, that's okay, as long as you are good in the red zone, and they've been outstanding offensively in the red zone. How do they get stops? I think first and foremost, they have to do one thing that they've been doing consistently, and they've pretty much been doing this since week 1. The culture, the style, the personality The promise that Dan Quinn made about what we would think of his team, win or lose, is that they were going to play fast, they were going to hustle, they were going to play relentlessly with a high motor. They've been doing that defensively. They have been. They've been tackling much better. They pursue well. That has to be a given for this defense every week. You've got to have that when you're not overloaded with high-level personnel. Secondly, you've got to stop the run. You know, you got to be consistently gap sound. You've got to tackle well. Because here's the thing. If you don't stop the run, you know, and you give a quarterback like Caleb Williams the opportunity to be, you know, a versatile, two-dimensional, you don't know what's coming next. Is it quick game? Is it screen? Is it DeAndre Swift? Is it play action? You're not going to hold up. This defense isn't going to hold up against that. So you've got to stop the run. The Bears have very good play action off of their run game. Again, Swift averaging 4.8 yards per carry in the last three games. They got to hold them to less than four. It's got to be like 3.9 or less per carry. You got to be aware of screens with this team. Waldron's dialing up, you know, plays that are easy for Caleb to get to and to get confident with. You know, they've got quick and bubble screens. They've got traditional running back screens. They've got tight end screens. You've got to pursue well. You got to tackle well. You got to be aware because they're getting some chunk yards on some of those plays. So, number one, Washington beats Chicago if defensively they step up and they get enough stops. You know, again, I would say if Chicago has 9 or 10 possessions, you got to get them off the field with punts or turnovers on 4 or 5 of them. You know, even if they end up with 5 scoring drives, 3 field goals, 2 touchdowns, that's 23 points. You can score 23 and win the game, more than 23 and win the game. Number two, turnover margin is going to be huge in this game because the Bears have really been a good takeaway team. They are plus 6 in turnover margin during their 3-game win streak. They are currently tied for 3rd in the league in overall turnover margin. They're 3rd in the league, 3rd in the league in takeaways. Washington's overall turnover margin is fine, you know, this year, but it's not because of takeaways. It's because they're not giving the ball away. But Chicago has 13 takeaways in 6 games. Washington has 6 takeaways in 7 games. You give the Bears extra possessions during the game, your chances of winning the game against them are diminished. You can't lose the turnover margin battle, you know, in a big way. They've been plus 3, plus 2, plus 1 in their games over the last 3 weeks. And that's been a big reason why they've won by 2 big margins, and then they won by 6 over the Rams to start this win streak. Number 3, Jalen Johnson, number 1 jersey-wise for the Bears, cornerback, is an absolute beast. Monster year in 2023, got the big contract in the offseason, and he has been outstanding again. He's right there, Denton. Jalen Johnson, when you watch him, and I watched the last 2 games, he is, I don't know if I'd put him at Sauce Gardner or Pat Surtain's level, but he's not far from it. I think there's a chance he travels, he stars, he covers Terry wherever Terry goes. I think you can't throw in his direction. You're asking for trouble. Look, I trust Terry. You know, if you want to give him a go ball in a one-on-one 50-50, Terry's a great contested catch guy. Got it. You're just not going to make a living. You're not going to get more production than less going after Jalen Johnson. This will be fun to watch what Kingsbury does. You know, how he uses Terry to get him away from Jalen Johnson. Because we're not big as a motion team. Formationally, you know, will they bunch him up? How will they use him out of the backfield? Who knows? But you don't, you want to get Terry involved in the game. You don't want to take him out of the game. But you've got to be aware that Chicago's Jalen Johnson is an absolute stud corner. Now, Brisker, their safety, is on the injury report. He's a very good player, a ball hawk guy, too. Chicago's pass defense is 2nd in the league per the DVOA metric. They're 7th in the league in third down stops. Number four on Washington beats the Bears if. You got to protect in drop back. If you do have to go, look, if Marcus Mariota's playing and you can't run the football, and I'll get to that in a moment, I think it's going to be a long day because he's not a drop back quarterback. Jaden is. If it's Jaden and you are forced to go drop back a lot, you got to protect because the Bears right now are second overall in the NFL in next gen's pass rush win rate. And let me give you the players that are getting it done. Montez Sweat, Darrell Taylor, number 52. This dude is a pass rusher. Their interior guys, number 99, I think his name is Dexter. This dude can get pressure. The other guy is all right. Billings, I think his name is. You've got to protect because they'll be disruptive. And, you know, I feel great with number five back there and his ability to create and go off platform and, by the way, hang in the pocket and throw the football accurately, but you've got to protect. And look, Washington's offensive line, other than Jaden Daniels, Cliff Kingsbury, the record, that's probably the biggest surprise for a lot of people so far this year. They are the number one run block win rate team in the NFL per next gen. They are number six in pass block win rate. The offensive line has been outstanding this year. I would say specifically the interior, Biotish, Allegretti, Cosme, but Wiley's a hell of a run blocker as well. You know, Brandon Coleman, the combination of Coleman and Lucas, Coleman in particular has had really good moments. I think most of you kind of understood that the offensive line's a lot better than you thought it would be, but I don't know if every one of you knew that they are the number one run-blocking offensive line in the league right now and number six in pass-blocking. Lastly, Washington beats the Bears if. I think you got to run the football. Like last week, I said Carolina's just terrible defensively. They can't stop the run. Chicago's the number two pass defense in the NFL. They're not a great run defense. Teams have run the ball against them. And look, this will be the first team since Richardson and Indianapolis that has a dual threat quarterback, no matter who the quarterback is. So running the football and staying, you know, two-dimensional. You know, being versatile offensively and doing what you've done. You know, it's almost like get stops on defense and do what you've done offensively. That's simplifying the keys to any one of their games, you know, without any kind of detail behind it. Because what they've done offensively is they've been the best team in the league at possessing the football in terms of points per drive, in terms of punts per drive. They've had the formula offensively. They've run it when they've been able to run it. They've thrown it when they've been able to throw it. They've been balanced. They've been unbalanced. It hasn't mattered. They have moved the football. They are a really good offensive football team. And in these games, when you are a bit more concerned about whether or not your defense will hold up, versus, you know, what you were last week or against Cleveland, certainly, or against the Giants, your best defense has to be your offense. They got to control the football. They've got to score, you know, continue with this ridiculous 3.5 points per drive number. It's almost double the team that's in second right now. They are lethal offensively as a scoring and a move-the-sticks offense. Not to mention, they can be super explosive as well. We saw that, you know, in the Cleveland game. You know, they had seven explosives in that game. So the five keys, get stops. Turnover margin will be big because Chicago's feasted off it. Jalen Johnson, be careful. You don't want to go at him too much. You got to protect in drop back mode. They've done a good job of that, but Chicago can get after the passer. And then offensively, just do what you've been doing. But I think this week it's run the football. I think you can run the football against Chicago. So tell me the Dallas Cowboys Commanders story you want to tell me.
All right. So there's a story published on ESPN. This is the headline of the story. It's a real headline. Are Jerry Jones's fan tours a hurdle to a Cowboys Super Bowl?
I've heard about these fan tours. This is where they charge fans, and the fans are essentially walking around the facility when the team's practicing, right?
During the day. Like, this is not on, like, a, you know, it's after 6 p.m., everybody's gone home. This is, like, during the day, you can pay money to tour the facility while the players are there and while the players are practicing. So the story focuses on this, like, weird culture of Jerry Jones effectively being Jerry Jones and how that's hindering the Dallas Cowboys. But as it's relevant to our organization, there's a section in here that features comments from former Cowboy players that have not now gone elsewhere praising the new situations that they are in. And if you look at the Commanders roster, you, of course, have Dorance Armstrong and Dante Fowler Jr., who have both spent time in Dallas, who are now here. And I look at Dorance Armstrong's comments. It says, quote, "I'm smiling. When I walk in the building here, I just know, like, I just have to work."
It's a different day, that's for sure.
It is a very different
day. And that's a shot at his former team.
That it definitely is, but it gets better with Dante Fowler Jr. I mean, hold on to your seats here. He says, quote, "You've got real facilities here." That's
a new one.
That's a new one. It gets better, though. He says, he continues, "You might not see tourists coming around, but it keeps the main thing the main thing."
Yeah, you know, and I want to look this up because when you mentioned that, I remember reading something about these tours. Dalton Schultz, the tight end who was with the Cowboys, is now with the Houston Texans, said last spring, he was on Pat McAfee, he said the facility was like a zoo. Fans would be tapping on the glass walls of the weight room to get the players' attention while they were inside working out. And apparently he was kind of the first player to say it out loud. How about this? Cowboys defensive end KJ Henry, remember him? Arrived in Dallas the first week of October this season, and he'd already been prepped by his Bengals teammate Justin Rogers, a former Cowboy. He talked about the tours all the time, just saying that it's the difference. Like, people are always touring, always walking through the facility, so just be ready to see random people. I didn't know KJ Henry was in Dallas. I thought he was in Buffalo. Isn't that where he first?
I thought he was in Cincinnati.
Or Cincinnati. That's what I meant.
He's been all over the place.
He has been. I mean, Jerry and Dan, you know, when Jerry really introduced the league and the league's owners to, okay, we share in all this media revenue, 32 ways. But if I go out and generate other kinds of revenue, do I have to share it with everybody? And the answer was no. And so he started doing those massive deals. I think that first massive deal, correct me if I'm wrong, was with Pepsi. You know, I'm talking about late 80s, early 90s. And Dan came in and, you know, he was a marketer. He was a merchandiser. And he understood how to take this product with a built-in massive, you know, and very passionate fan base and get every ounce, every nickel and penny out of it. And that's what he did, you know, and his focus was much more on that, on extracting as much of, you know, his fans' money for sort of past performance. And, you know, it was just not a good recipe for winning in the present and then winning in the future. Jerry's done that a lot, too. Of course, Jerry's had more success with his team in terms of games won, in terms of, you know, personnel, et cetera. But, yeah, I mean, how much money do they make on the fan tours?
Well,
and how many teams do that in season? Does that story say it?
I can't believe many do it in season, but it doesn't say, I don't know if it says exclusively how much they make. It does have the prices, though, that you can pay. There's three different packages. $40 for the lowest package, in which fans can experience what the employee manning the tour information booth that day describes as a day in the life of a Cowboys player. You can pay $70 for the ultimate fan experience, which includes an authentic letter of fandom from Cowboys owner Jerry Jones, a souvenir tote, a lapel pin, and dining and shopping coupon to use at the Star, which I assume is a restaurant in Dallas. Or you can pay $90 to get everything just mentioned, plus a question and answer session with an AI Jerry Jones hologram.
Jesus.
You have to
say that the average price, you said, was between 40 and 90. So let's just say it's 65 bucks. What do they have coming through that facility for this thing? 1,000 people a week?
I would something, maybe not 1,000, but probably close. I mean,
if it's 1,000 times 52 weeks, if they do it every week, it's $3.3 million in new revenue.
Not bad, I suppose. There's quotes in here from people that went on there, and like these tours are happening on Thursday.
Here it is in the story. I just found it. The Cowboys say tours of the Star and AT&T Stadium, so that's also AT&T Stadium, so their facility and AT&T Stadium, combined sell 500,000 tickets per year and generate nearly $10 million of annual revenue. By the way, it's considered football-related income, and it's included in the league's revenue share with the players. So the players may not like the fans banging on the glass, you know, coming up and asking for autographs as they're, you know, trying to learn the install for the upcoming opponent, but they are making money off those people.
Well, thank God. Can you imagine if they were doing this and they weren't making it? Like, it was just all going straight to the pocket of Jerry Jones, and you had suckers paying for an AI hologram Q&A. You know how down bad you have to be to pay for an AI hologram Q&A?
Oh, my God. I see. None of that stuff interests me to begin with.
None. I don't even want to talk to Jerry Jones.
You couldn't pay me to go on a tour of any of these places. But I think it is kind of, I understand now. I mean, just, you know, the contrast of what Dallas is and what Washington is now. You know, they've both been, well, Washington clearly the front runner, leader in the clubhouse in terms of the most dysfunctional NFL franchises, really sports franchises, for, you know, 25 years of Snyder. But the Cowboys were no beacon of, you know, of functionality. And it's one of the reasons that they haven't, you know, sniffed a deep run in the postseason since the mid-90s. They did it with Jimmy's players. They did it basically because of Jimmy Johnson. And since he's gone, they've won a lot of games. You cannot, you know, I've never done this for you Cowboy fans. I've never compared the two in terms of the results on the field. Dallas has won a lot more games on the field and been to the playoffs a lot more than Washington has over the last quarter century. However, neither one of the two franchises has made a deep run in the postseason since the mid and early 1990s. Dallas, the furthest they've gotten is a divisional round game, and that's the same for Washington. Washington's gotten to a divisional round game on two different occasions during the Snyder years. First year, 99, and then in 2005, when they last won a playoff game. Yeah, they last won a playoff game, 2005. Anything else? I want to read that story. I just pulled up the story. I want to read this story because the player quotes about kind of the place being a complete zoo is interesting. You know, here's one from Tony Pollard. Tony Pollard, who was with the Cowboys, and is now where? Tennessee. Here in Tennessee, it's more about football. It's just X's and O's. I'm in a better place mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, just all around. Kelvin Joseph, who was with the Cowboys for two seasons before moving to the Chiefs this past offseason, he's now a member of the Colts. Over here in Kansas City, the point is the football and winning championships. There in Dallas, it was a lot of football and like a lot of other stuff. And then I've got the Dante Fowler Jr. quote that you just read. Yeah.
You've got real facilities here is just such a great quote. Because imagine hearing that a year ago when the team ranked dead last
in
everything.
Well, you go back 10 years now, how long have they had the bubble? 10 years? They didn't have a bubble 10 years ago. That's probably more than 10 years ago. They ripped up that artificial turf field this offseason. that hideous looking thing that really looked like a relic of like 1976, you know, at their facility.
Such a weird green color.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.